Obrigado, professor Celso, professora Débora, professor Daniel. E agora, a palavra está com vocês. Ludmila. Sim, perguntas?
Não, pergunta, mas um pequeno comentário aqui. Estou feliz que vieram aqui, isso é resultado da nossa delegação na Israel, mas eu convido todos vocês a chegar no nosso site e olhar no reporto com muitos detalhes e contatos sobre nossos contratos na Israel. É porque nós fazemos muitos trabalhos e você pode olhar todos os contatos, todos os detalhes, todas as ideias que nós pegamos na Israel. E, muito obrigada.
Próxima.
Ao parabenizar a BMS pelo evento, eu queria ser bem sucinto e fazer uma colocação, uma pergunta. Aqui no Brasil nós temos um sistema de ensino que, se a gente fosse fazer uma metáfora com o sistema de produção industrial, a gente teria aqui um sistema que é um prazo determinado, fixo, com qualidade indeterminada, flexível. A gente tem um tempo com os alunos e o final desse processo a gente tem alunos de as mais variados níveis de formação. E a gente utiliza ainda médias aritméticas de nota para provar aluno, que é algo absolutamente incompatível com você pensar em autonomia, você pensar em coletividade, em cooperação, como você bem disse. Se a gente adotar o sistema ao contrário, ou seja, a minha qualidade tem que ser fixa e o tempo pode ser variável. Mas aí não é um tempo de cronologia, não quero aumentar a quantidade de anos. Aí a tecnologia pode ajudar a gente a acelerar ou auxiliar esses alunos dentro desse tempo, para que a gente tenha uma qualidade fixa. E a gente inverte essa lógica. Porque hoje a gente tem, como eu disse, prazo fixo, qualidade variável. A ideia é qualidade fixa, tempo variável, e ao tempo aí a tecnologia nos ajudar nesse sentido. Essa é uma bola que eu queria que você comentasse um pouco da tecnologia nesse sentido, não como substituição a nada, mas como facilitador das individualizações dentro de um coletivo.
Hope I'll be able to answer you. When you look at technology, you can talk about disruption that continues what exists and disruption that change completely what exists. So when just in Israel you have more than 200 startups in edtech, in learning technology. In China, you're going to go to China, so China is a gigantic edtech ecosystem. You have, if I'm not mistaken, 2,000 startups just in China. If I understand your question, you're asking, today the system is set, right? It's hard to change the system. It's a long way to change the system. This is what you ask. So how we can use the technology to start implement now, right? I understand your question? Okay. So this is what I mentioned about early adapters. The expression early adapter is part of a theory by Rogers, which is called the diffusion of innovation. You probably heard. It's a simple concept which say that in each market you divide the market by 5 different personalities of customers, and each personality of customer helps you understand how your product or your idea enters the market. So the first 2 parts are innovators and early adapters. Those consist approximately 50% of the market. And the idea of it is when you get to this 50% market share, it's easier to go to the early majority, which is 30%. That's the third part. Now, let's take this idea and put it into use inside university. So, for example, you have 200 faculty members divided through the same system, through the same idea of 5 different segments. 15% of those 200 are your early adapters. Work with them, not with the rest. If it's a it's the easier. Use their needs, what they need to change, what they want to do, in order to do the change, and not change everything. Just start small. build on achievements. You need to, okay, what's the difference in personality between early adapters and early majority? Maybe that's the important thing. The early adapters are people that take chances. They're people that only need a promise to do something. They're people who will wake at 3 in the morning for the new iPhone. People who take chances. And the early majority are people who need facts to change their behavior. Those are not the people who buy the iPhone. They will wait for a lot of people to have iPhone, and then they will buy an iPhone. So you need the facts in order to get to the 30%, which is the big chunk of change. So create enough success and facts of success with this 15%, you'll be able to move forward. So it's just personality differences. I hope I answered your question.
Bom dia. Quero parabenizar a BNS pelo excelente evento, pelos resultados que está trazendo. Parabenizo também o professor pela excelente apresentação e pela sua disponibilidade, disposição em compartilhar os avanços de tecnologia. Eu queria deixar uma questão relacionada à Escola Minerva, que tem trazido um impacto global em termos de sua proposta e, aparentemente, ela resgata o aprendizado pela tradição e pela diversidade cultural com os programas que ela faz. Eu queria ouvir um pouquinho de a sua comparação de um mundo tão tecnológico como o que foi trazido para essa proposta da Universidade Minerva de trazer a tradição e a diversidade, não necessariamente com o aporte tecnológico, mas sim com o aporte realmente de múltiplas experiências e aprendendo pela prática.
Okay, thank you for the question. I really like Minerva. I think beside of their pedagogical approach, they have a great marketing team, which is important. They really know how to tell a story. I would argue that our presentation is not technological. I only bring you example from technology. It's all ideas. It's all ideas. So you can take those ideas and implement them today. And this is, I think, you know, what Minerva did. They really took what's a degree and broke it into a different way of thinking. I don't remember the specifics of their program. It's like 4 months there, and then you have all time. But the idea is the same. If I want to be a bit problematic, I would say people don't want to sit in a class for an hour and a half. That's period. Nobody learns that way. There is the workforce doesn't work that way. That's not how you learn in the workforce today. You need to have a new role, you go and do it. That's the way you learn. If I'm remembering correct, Minerva didn't, in my opinion, really found the formula, but it's really testing a new way of doing it. Did I answer your question?
Hi, congrats for your talk. And how do you see the role played by learning analytics on building educational personalized tracks? I mean, I have no doubt about the great potential, but what about it working effectively? Have you seen it working very effectively?
You talk about analytics and yes, data using.
Yes, that's perfect.
Oh, wow. Yes, of course. It started. The Israeli Minister of Education 6 months ago started building their big data unit. So it's really a whole new experience. The ideas I bring of data, it's from other other fields. Look at transportation, look at medicine, how they use data and change the way. In education, what I love about the connection between data and education, that you get a whole new layer of data that you didn't have, pedagogical layer. For example, how do you users behave on your online platforms? A lot of data is accumulated and not done nothing with it. You know, how many times people get to answer a question, when they switch from a question to Facebook and why. Those things can really, data can really change the way you create content and the way that you, but I have to say now it's more of a promise than a fulfillment.
No, in the same way. And how about AI? And AI. Yes, you have some examples for us, yes. And maybe virtual reality also.
That's the important thing. Of the example I gave you are AI examples. The automated, the sense technology is AI-based. Obviously, but AI and technology as a whole is only a question of what pedagogical goals you want to achieve, and then you'll choose the technology will help you. VR is also a great promise. I read an article actually on the way here about VR. It's a great promise, which didn't. It's a technology that exists for 10 years, and you do not see any real commercial use of VR beside gaming. Maybe in professional learning, professional you can use in building scenarios. For example, if you are an ambulance driver, you can build a scenario of where do you stop the ambulance and stuff. But it's a very expensive technology. It's maybe the most expensive technology I know. VR, and as I do not know anybody using it. But as I said, the way that I think we should frame the question is not a technological question; it's a pedagogical question.
Please, how long takes to get a new patent in Israel? You have a new product, and you have to have a patent. Okay, how long it takes?
I want to answer this question in two ways. First of all, we'll answer directly. Most of Israeli startups I know go to the US patent. They go and patent in the US because this is the market they want to go. So in Israel, you have a big ecosystem of lawyers and patents. I don't remember how much it takes, but you have 2 years for a prevasori. I don't remember the terms. You have something for a small time, and then you continue. But the second part of my answer to you would be that patent, on a business level, patent is less important. Value is more important.
Yes, but not so, because if you have a new product, the one that built it, they don't want to sell in the market if they have to not take care of his new idea. Mm-hmm. So. In my institution, we have some of this problem. For biological, for medical studies, we have some subjects that we cannot take the patent because they have 10 years, 5 years. Because here in Brazil, our institutions who take care of the patent, they not have intelligence, artificial, either biological too, no kind of intelligence works here to take the patents. We have to wait long time, and the students get bored about it and go to something else. Sometimes we get patent in United States, but the dollar grows the value, and sometimes for many students, for the students. Institution is not very good. Understand what I mean?
I want to ask a clarifying question. You're talking about patents of the students or patents of the professors?
Professor, okay. With students. I don't allow only professors. I allow students and professors. Okay. This is the future. Professors are professors.
No, I'm talking about research-based
research
patents.
And the project final, the end product. Okay. Have to get a patent.
I'm not sure I agree with you.
Disagree?
You know, from a business point of view, or from an entrepreneurial point of view, a patent is most of the time something that slows the process, because it takes a long time to take a patent, even in Israel. But I'm not a patent expert, I don't remember how to share with you, but I'd love to make an inquiry on your health, for example, in Tel Aviv University or Jerusalem University. They have commercial units, which their job is to commercialize research. And one of the first steps to commercializing those research are patents. So I'd love to see how they work and you know, connect it to you. But I'm not the expert in that field.
Okay, but we must, here in Brazil, have a more intelligent system to short the time.
I agree with you totally.
Because the researchers and the students and the teacher, everybody else, they will be more secure and doing more work. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a problem right now. So when you get your artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. take here to Brasilia. Okay, you will be very good here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Olá. Cumprimentando a todo mundo da mesa, na figura do presidente, Janguinho Diniz. Eu queria fazer só um paralelo. O Brasil acaba de eleger um presidente de origem militar que está formando um governo com uma influência muito grande de pessoas do meio militar. Então, queria saber, pela sua experiência, sua visão, inclusive pelos problemas que você relatou, como militar, como é que você vê esse paralelo da influência da liturgia militar, da disciplina militar, da educação que é dada e posicionamento, postura em Israel, que a gente escuta aqui sempre falar que o serviço militar é obrigatório, inclusive para as mulheres, e o que isso poderia contribuir para o Brasil em termos de uma mudança de postura em um país que, nos últimos 30 anos, teve os governos ou social-democrata ou de esquerda e que agora passou radicalmente para um outro lado de um mandato que parece ser mais militar.
Ok, then it's an explosive question. Very interesting question. I'll tell you why, because, you know, beside my work in technology, I opened an NGO that works in Israeli society in order to change the culture into a more sharing culture because of the military experiences. So I have some kind of perspective. I don't know what the defense problem are of Brazil. I don't know what aim you want to use the military for. In Israel, the military is mandatory. Our whole culture, the Israeli culture, not the Jewish one, the Israeli culture is really built around military. It's very incorporated in day-to-day life. You can see it in organizations, you can see it in management, you can see it in culture. I'm trying to see how to navigate with this with this question. I have to say that in Israel there is not a unit that is responsible for military education outside of the military, but it's really incorporated in the Israeli culture, so it's kind of hard for me to give you examples without being problematic, but I'd love to continue afterwards the conversation, you know, so we won't have any headlines from here. No, okay, you know what? Thank you for this focus. Thank you for the focus. The talk in Israel is started by the necessity of innovation. The army and the army culture is the engine of innovation in Israel on an historic point of view. You know, from building of a nuclear program and from the cybersecurity point of view, And all the most of the entrepreneurs who did big stuff are army, ex-army intelligence officers. So there is a big, big connection between innovation and military and the army. Obviously, I would argue that the army training program for cybersecurity is the most advanced education program maybe in the world, because they bring people in 4 months from non-knowledge to top of the world. And it's kind of a secret how to do it. But the impact of it is after the army, those people go out and build companies. So there is a positive connection between the military and innovation. I can say also, I will say a negative connection just to be balanced here. The military culture is counterproductive to the innovative culture, because military culture is very top-down, very hierarchy culture, right? You have a commander who tells stuff to the soldiers. And in innovation, you need to be totally open to hear everything from anyone and not to stop at hierarchy. So there is that's a problem.
Então, pessoal, chegando ao final, né? Mais alguma pergunta? Pois é, chegando ao final do nosso último seminário do ano, quero agradecer imensamente ao professor Yaron Edel. Vamos fazer uma homenagem ao professor. It's just a simple award, yeah? To manage Yaron Chen Edel. Thank you for being here and to divide your knowledge with us.
Thank you.
Convidar todos para o jantar. Hoje à noite, a partir das 20 horas, agradecer a presença de todos, a presença dos nossos vice-presidentes e a presença do professor Yaron. Boa tarde a todos.